You're listening to Boston Public Radio with Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. I have a feeling you might want to call in here, too, at 877-301-8970. A few years ago, there was Eat, Pray, Love. Now, and not quite the sequel, there's Salt, Sugar, Fat. It's written by Pulitzer Prize winner Michael Moss. He goes inside the processed food industry, and the picture is not pretty. Welcome to Boston Public Radio, Michael Moss.
Hi,
Thanks
Michael.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So before you tell us about what you found out in your book, and I have to say I'm appalled, I want to know, are you the real deal, Michael Moss? What did you just have for lunch?
I just had, believe it or not, a cheese sandwich
because
I am like hooked on cheese like the entire country. And I think you probably already know that, you know, our average consumption of cheese has tripled since the 70s to, get this, 33 pounds a person per year.
You're a good American, Michael. So what
That's
kind of bread, what kind of cheese?
Well, it was actually, so it was whole grain bread,
okay.
And it was Swiss and whatever else was in my cheese drawer, because I got a whole bunch of cheese in there I can pull from. So, but the point is, and this is important, cheese is not bad. A certain amount of cheese that you eat for itself, the issue with obesity and the issue with our tripling of consumption is how the industry with the government hand in hand turned cheese into an ingredient that gets put into processed foods, stuffed into pizza crusts, and on and on and on. So we're not even really realizing we're eating the cheese. We're getting what the industry calls the mouthfeel of the cheese, which is basically saturated fat. And that is one of the three big allures that they have.
You know, one of the all of us who know only from experience as opposed to research and investigation like you've done, we all say things like we know the processed food is addictive. Is it figuratively addictive, or is it created so that it is literally addictive, Michael Moss?
You know, the industry, there is no word that the industry hates more than the word addiction. It loves alluring, craveable. There's all kinds of euphemisms. And I have to say that I was fairly skeptical until I spent some time with Nora Volkow, who runs the National Institute on Drug Abuse out of Washington, Bethesda, actually. And she convinced me, and she's a neuroscientist, and she's done studies on both narcotics and food. And she convinced me that her work shows that the most highly loaded fat and sugary foods, for some people, are every bit as addictive as some narcotics. I think for the rest of us, you can, you know, addiction may be too strong. Hugely compelling, especially when you have stressful lives, and another reason why we've become so dependent on convenience foods, processed foods.
We're speaking to Michael Moss. He's written this spectacular and frightening book, Salt, Sugar, Fat, How the Food Giants Hooked Us. Our number is 877-301-8970.
Michael, tell people, because I was stunned by this. You talk about in your book how these great, you know, the people from Kraft Foods and all the big food makers get together. And, well, they don't do it together. They do it with their own people. But they're basically plotting on how to addict us. How do they do that?
So everything that goes into their formulation and making of products is to make them as attractive as possible. And you have to realize the companies argue rather convincingly that they never intended to make America obese or otherwise ill. It wouldn't be in their financial interest to do that. And moreover, any single one of their products can't be blamed for the obesity crisis, even the most sugary soda. But in, you know, through the documents that I was able to find, thousands and thousands of confidential documents and the interviews that I was able to have with their top scientists, it's absolutely amazing to see how much effort they put into making these products as alluring as possible. And salt, sugar, fat are their three pillars, their holy grail, if you will. And their research shows that when they hit the perfect amounts of each of those ingredients, they'll send us over the moon. Their products will fly off the shelves. We'll eat more. We'll buy more. There being companies, they, of course, will make more money.
And by the way, didn't I read that they actually – things like the shape of salt on a particular food is something they study so that its exchange with your saliva produces a reaction that's more alluring, to use their word. Am I not right about that?
I used to think salt was just a rock came out of the ground and they ground it up a bit and you sprinkled on food. Well, there are dozens of different varieties that they manipulate to fit perfectly with whatever processed food they're working on. And one of my favorites, and I use this at home, it's called kosher salt.
So do I.
Is, you know, looks like snow. It's actually tiny little pyramids with flat sides that stick better to the food. But here's the great thing. They're hollowed out inside, so the saliva has more contact with the salt, which sends the signals to your taste buds faster, which go right to the brain and say, hey, Michael, let's eat some more. They call it the flavor burst of salt.
What's another
term? Oh, my God. We'll have to go home and take the kosher salt and look at it under a microscope because I have it, too. I never noticed it was flat and pyramid
fascinating.
Shape.
Fascinating.
Is this bliss point that you talk about in your book?
The bliss point actually applies more to sugar than anything else. And a legend in the industry, Howard Moskowitz, walked me through his recent creation of a new soda for Dr. Pepper, a new soda flavor. And to do that, and he's a mathematician trained in experimental psychology at Harvard as well. And to do that, he uses, you know, regression analysis, incredible amounts of math and science. He'll take dozens and dozens of formulas slightly varying from one to the other and then have consumers test those. And he'll take all of the data, throw it into his computer to find the very perfect amount of sugar that will guarantee success for that soda, particular soda. And you have to remember that there's a certain limit to our salt, to our sugar fondness. You can do your own experiment, take a cup of coffee if you like sugar in it, and keep adding sugar until it hits the optimum level. Then keep adding more, and you'll like it less. And so the bliss point is a bell-shaped curve, the top of the curve where your liking, your loving, your craving of sugar is at the very top. And for products aimed at kids, they used kids as the guinea pigs because their sweeter tooth is actually even stronger than ours.
I think I've lived my whole life at the bliss point, Michael Moss. Hey, Michael, before we take calls, did these people eat their own food? I mean, you talk to casino operators, and Massachusetts is about to begin a casino experiment, and you say, do you want a casino in your hometown? They go, absolutely not. Do these guys eat, or women eat their own stuff?
That was actually one of the surprising things, is that so many of the top people I talked to at these companies do not eat their own food, especially when they run into health problems. There was a top scientist, now former at Kraft, who blew out his knee, and so he couldn't jog anymore as his way of weight control. First thing he did was stop eating any calories in liquids, because he knows there's actually some really intriguing science that says that when we ingest calories in liquids, our brains are less able to detect those calories than they are in solid food. And then he stopped eating things like salty snacks, because he's one of those many of us who open a bag of chips and cannot stop with the one little serving that they talk about in fine print on the package.
Oh, yeah. Who can stop with the one little serving? If you have a big bag of potato chips, you're going to go through the whole thing. What are, Michael, the foods that they have achieved, this perfect combination of sugar, salt, and fat that people find irresistible? Can you name me a few?
Well, you just said the perfect one, which is the potato chip. And we all know that salt is there, and that hits your tongue first, the flavor bit burst. It's got it's loaded with fat, and the mouthfeel of fat gives it the crunch and it's that wonderful warm feeling.
Great.
But it turns out that the potato chip is actually loaded with sugar, not added to the chip, but in the form of the starch of the potato itself, which gets converted to sugar the second it hits your tongue. So it's got all three: salt, sugar, fat. And there's something more too. If you like Cheetos,
yes.
The industry has these great insider terms about the things that they do to these products to make them so alluring. And for Cheetos, there's this one of the 12 things that makes Cheetos just a miracle food in their eyes. It has something called vanishing caloric density. When the Cheetos melt in your mouth, the signal goes to your brain that, hey, the calories have disappeared. No problem, Michael. Just keep eating. You might as well be eating celery.
Well, you know what they've also done brilliantly with Cheetos is they've created an orange dye that never washes off your hands. So you're constantly reminded to go back. Let's go to the phones.
Hold on for 1 second. Michael, I just have to tell you, you've got one of the great voices of all time. I just love listening to you.
You know, memory is so important. I went to the Kellogg Research Development Factory. We were, you know, they were trying to prove to me how dependent they were on salt. And boy, they did a great job because they made for me some of their iconic foods without any salt in them at all, including Cheez-Its, which I can normally eat day in and day out. It was the most god-awful experience you ever. But I mention this because they had some Pop-Tarts that they were making, and they'd screwed up, and they were all kind of going in this big vat, and they were, you know, going to dispose of it. But it brought me back, the smell brought me back to my childhood, because I was a bit of a latchkey kid for a time and grew up on Pop-Tarts. And it's funny how your memory really counts for a lot.
It does.
In processed foods.
I lived inside a bag of potato chips when I was a latchkey kid. George from New Bedford, you were on Boston Public Radio, 877-301-8970, with Michael Moss, the author of Salt, Sugar, and Fat. Welcome, George.
Well, thank you very much. Michael, I believe I've heard on a recent radio program that there's a upper level for, you know, restricting the amount of daily intake of sugar to 44 grams. I don't know if that's true or not. But how many grams would be in a teaspoon of sugar anyway?
Well, it's going to be about 4.5. It depends how much, you know, it's a little inaccurate the way you measure it. The here's the deal on sugar. The FDA, which normally sets standards for how much ideally we should be taking, is totally shied away from sugar. So when you look on the nutrient facts box on every label and look on the line of sugar, they'll tell you how much sugar is in the product, but they won't tell you what your daily max recommended amount should be because they haven't set that limit. And moreover, they don't even tell you how much sugar is added to the product. It's one issue that consumer health advocates are going nuts about and pushing Washington to do something better on. The American Heart Association has come up with some numbers like 44 grams. It depends how old you are, male, female, your other sort of health conditions. There's a sliding scale, but I would refer you to them if you want to get a number for yourself.
George, thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
We're talking to Michael Moss, author of the absolutely fascinating new book, Salt, Sugar, and Fat. Our numbers are 877-301-8970 if you'd like to talk to us and or Michael. And also our email address is bpr@wgbh.org. You know, I had no idea that products like Prego spaghetti sauce or Yoplait were so loaded with sugar. Or if you look at the ingredients in breads, like you think are pretty good breads, you know, Pepperidge Farm breads or something, they've got like high fructose corn syrup. Who knew? I mean, I didn't know. This is all to make me reach the bliss point when I toast my bread.
Absolutely. And it used to. And that's one of the things I think that really startles even food industry scientists is how sugar moved from from desserts and ice cream throughout the grocery store. And you mentioned Prego, you know, its sauces can have as much as 2 teaspoons of sugar in a serving, which is as much as the equivalent of a couple of Oreo cookies. Now, some of that's going to be from the tomatoes, but it's much more than some other sauces you can get, and certainly much more than you would make at home, typically.
You know, we're talking to Michael Moss, who is the author of Salt, Sugar, Fat. In a second, Michael, after we take a few more calls, I know we're the second fattest nation on Earth. We used to be the fattest, but Qatar is finally...
That's right.
I want to talk to you about solutions, and for people who resist government intervention, whether or not the Michael Bloombergs of the world have the right idea. But first, let's go to Megan is in Brookline, and she's on with, as we just said, with Michael Moss. Welcome, Megan.
Hi, thank you.
Pleasure.
I'm just wondering if high fructose corn syrup is as evil as Whole Foods says it is, and what exactly is it, and are the corn lobbyists knowingly just making sure that high fructose corn syrup is in all of our foods as a money-making, venture?
All great questions, Megan.
I love this battle between the cane and sugar beet growers for table sugar and the high fructose corn syrup growers, and now you have fruit. I'll get to that in a second. The nutrition experts I trust the most say that sugar is sugar is sugar from a caloric standpoint. And there's almost no difference that they can see in the science so far between table sugar, high fructose corn syrup, and mind you, fruit juice. And that's why nurses in schools are no longer pushing juice on kids who are overweight. They're pushing plain water on them. And yet, I mean, one of the interesting things about fruit is you're seeing fruit splashed on the label of products, you know, so much more in the grocery store. And often they'll just be a smidgen of fruit concentrate in there, which can be nothing more than plain sugar, for its halo of health. So fruit juice, even high fructose corn syrup, table sugar, it's all the same to nutritionists who are worried about calories.
Megan, thank you so much for the call. Let's talk about solutions for a minute. You know, some people say education is the cure. Read books like Michael's and have people like Michelle Obama talking about what are healthy foods, what are not healthy foods. It seems to me, as a formerly overweight kid myself and as a parent, parents in this country have totally failed their children. Well, I mean, you have all these statistics. And so I am one who leans in the direction of the Michael Bloombergs with the soda size and the salt bans potentially, because we have proven that we can't do it ourselves. Yes, well, no?
Yeah, well, certainly one thing that failed was the school system. We used to have home economists who would teach not just girls but boys how to shop, how to cook, how to be in control of food in their life. And that fell by the wayside. At the same time, I read in the book that the industry began glomming onto the home economist movement. Betty Crocker, I used to think she was a real person. She was a figment of the imagination
of a
marketing official.
She wasn't real?
No, she wasn't real. She started out sort of writing these letters to customers, but then she started out sort of championing home economics. But in her vein, it was getting people to eat more foods available in the grocery store, including processed foods, convenience foods. So I'm actually really sympathetic, and I've heard this from the White House. They're looking at reinvigorating the home economics program. I know with my own two boys, 8 and 13, if you just, you know, we found that if you just talk to them a little bit about food, they're not going to throw those carrots and apple slices away in the lunchroom that they might otherwise. Kids really get it. They just need like a little bit of information and engagement, and it goes a long way. So I think that's one thing that could be really useful. You mentioned other government intervention. I mean, the problem is there's already tons of government intervention. The subsidies that go into the highly processed foods are huge. And part of another thing I know the White House is thinking about doing is just to figure out a way to shift some of those subsidies from the highly processed foods to the things that everybody says we should be eating more of, but they cost more, the fresh fruits and vegetables.
Our number
that
is,
could be a really key thing.
Excuse me, Michael. Our number is 877-301-8970 if you want to call in and talk to Michael, who is the author of Salt, Sugar, and Fat. Michael, tell the story to our listeners about Lunchables, how Lunchables came to be.
Lunchables was invented in the 80s when the company that owned it, Oscar Mayer, was starting to run into a bit of trouble on red meat. People were eating less because of the saturated fat and salt. They brought together their most brilliant marketers and package designers. And I spent a bunch of time with a great guy named Bob Drain, who worked at Oscar Mayer. He was fighting to save jobs at Oscar Mayer. And also just being a pure scientist, became enthralled by this project. And he and his team created the cold, pre-assembled, ready-to-eat lunch tray called the Lunchables, which, as we know, over the years, and this was after his time on the project, morphed into things like pizza Lunchables and hot dog Lunchables, hamburger Lunchables, pancake Lunchables, the maxed out Lunchables, which would wipe out a whole, almost a whole day's maximums for kids on fat, salt, sugar, became a huge marketing thing, in part because of the psychology that the company applied to the product, especially for kids. It wasn't so much about food, one Kraft official was fond of saying. It was about empowerment. And they came up with this slogan, you know, all day for kids, all day you do what they say, all day you got to do what they say, but lunchtime is all yours. And that struck a note with American kids. And the other thing about the Lunchables, it brought fast food into the grocery store. It was a gateway product. And so you saw more and more things in the store that really resemble things you used to buy at fast food chains.
Let's go to John from Nashua. John, you're on with the author of Sugar, Salt, and Fat, Michael Moss. Salt, Sugar, and Fat. Whoops.
Hi, John.
Hi. Two questions. Real quick, I'd like to know your opinion on the Atkins diet of a low carb, and can you define what a sugar alcohol is...
We're losing you, John. John, we're going to put you on hold, see if we can get you back in a minute. The question that we were able to hear, Michael Moss, what's with the Atkins diet, which I thought is sort of out of vogue. It was big, what, in the 80s, early 90s or something.
Yeah,
what's the deal now?
You know, the latest front page in the New York Times is the Mediterranean diet, which is my own personal one. I mean, I can eat olive oil and olives and cheese and bread and the red wine forever and ever. You know, I shy away from that in the book. There's one thing that really grabbed me, though, and I have to say Walter Willett, the head of nutrition at Harvard, convinced me of this, as other people. He is totally into nuts like cashews. I mean, if anything has sort of a miracle property, because you can take a handful of nuts, and if you're careful not to overeat because they're loaded with calories, they will fill you up until it's dinner time and give you great protein and give you good, you know, a good balance of fats, because all fat is not bad. You need to have the good fats and less of the saturated. So that's the only thing in my book that I sort of, you know, at all sort of mention in terms of a dieting thing. I think there's really something there with nuts.
Can we get one hopeful note? I hope I get the company right. If not, you'll correct me. We're talking to Michael Moss, author of Salt, Sugar, Fat, How the Food Giants Hooked Us. Is it Kraft that actually started policing itself and creating healthier foods? It is Kraft. Why did they do that? Because they thought it was in their economic self-interest? Because they had a come-to-Jesus moment? What happened with Kraft?
I'm so glad you mentioned it. They had a cabal of insiders who sincerely became concerned about the obesity crisis. And so much about it, what I read about the book is that the industry itself has known for years that responsibility for the crisis lays at least in large part at their feet. And Kraft, starting in around 2003, said, we've got to do something here. We're going to strike out on our own. They brought in some obesity experts, health nutrition experts. They cut back on their marketing of sugary products to kids. They looked at their disclosures on packages and started telling people how many total calories were in the package and how much total saturated fat, et cetera. And then they did the most amazing thing. They looked at their formulas and they told their food engineers to they had to put a cap on the amount of salt, sugar, fat they were putting on products, which was just stunning to their people, because all of their history, they have driven to use as much of those ingredients as they possibly could. And Kraft said, no, we've got to stop here and do the right thing by consumers. And hats off to them for giving that a go.
But Michael, it's also smart business in some sense, because they have to know that salt, sugar, and fat in the fat Americans is becoming like the cigarette issue, because the healthcare costs from obesity now are rivaling, if not surpassing, the healthcare costs of cigarette smoking. So they're going to be in trouble financially if they don't make some modifications, are they not?
Absolutely. And I think Kraft recognized that. If you want to talk about sort of the way out of this, it's, you know, it's got to be public concern, growing public concern about what we put into our bodies, getting to these companies, you know, so that they know that the way to make money is to make more healthy foods.
Okay.
And the way to keep the public trust is to do that.
Michael Moss, we only have 30 seconds left. Other than Kraft, this has been the most depressing conversation I've had in years. So give us a
what
hopeful.
What do you mean?
I'm
the
kidding.
Bliss point?
Give us a hopeful
potato chips
sign for the future in the next 30 seconds. Tell us why we're going to solve this salt, sugar, and fat epidemic.
In the very short term, you can read this book, and I'm hoping it will empower you to walk into the grocery store and do just a few things that'll let you get out with your good health intact. For example, the most loaded stuff tends to be at eye level. Simple trick, just look low, look high, and you'll find, for instance, the cereals with less sugar in them. Just simple things like that, I think, can be really empowering to consumers.
And read Michael Moss's great book, Salt, Sugar, Fat, How the Food Giants Hooked Us. Michael Moss, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Michael.
And we want to thank you guys for listening to another edition of Boston Public Radio. You can find us on the web at wgbhnews.org/BPR. By the way, housekeeping, Livingston Taylor is with us Friday. Currently working on a compilation album that captures the early and middle years of his career. It'll be available in the spring. We'll tell you about it tomorrow in the noon hour. John King from CNN on The Sequester. 1 o'clock on Open Mic, former gubernatorial candidate, maybe future gubernatorial candidate, Charlie Baker. Our show is a production of WGBH Radio. I am Jim Browdy.
And I am Marjorie Egan. I have sworn off salt, sugar, and fat.